Hold on tight. This is the Generic Live Show. Jumping into hour two of the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us here on this Sunday on the Generic Live Show. Dale Campbell here with you. You've made it to a brand new week. It's a pleasure to kick it off with you. Whether you're listening to us in America live, it's 4 minutes past eight on the East Coast, or if you're listening to us here in Australia, it is 11. It's 4 minutes past 11 on Australian Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Generic Live Show. It's a pleasure to be here, as always. Thanks for joining us. It wouldn't be a show without you, so diving into the second hour of the program. Now, before we jump full hog into the second hour of the program here, want to do a bit of housekeeping. Next week will be our last show before I take a podcation. GLS is going on vacation. We've been back to for two shows now, and we're already taking a vacation. So, sorry about that. Some things have come up that I have to take care of. Here, I need to do some housekeeping for GLS and some other stuff in school, and it's kicking up the semester. So, we're taking 2 weeks off. We're taking the 12th and the 19th of February off, so next week will be normal. Then we will have a 2 weeks holiday, and then we'll be back right before the Oscars on the 26th of February, and then we'll be going through right through to Easter, I believe. We'll be taking a week off over Easter. We'll take Easter Sunday off, then jumping right back into it. You know, I need a break too. You know, this show gets tiring. It's tiring. I enjoy doing it. I shouldn't say that that's a negative. It takes a lot of work, and I can't believe that people want to hear my opinions for 2 hours every single week. And I'm happy to deliver that service to you. Speaking of delivering a service to you, Mike Bird is no longer the premier of New South Wales. Finally, after pressure, Mike Bird announced his resignation last Thursday. Gladys Bergelin, which served as treasurer in the Bird government, will step in. Miss Bergelin was elected unopposed after other possible candidates pulled out of the race. She used her speech, her first speech as Premier, to outline her priorities.
The economic and infrastructure powerhouse of the nation, and Mike Baird has led that charge. He has made a big difference to the lives of the people of this state, which was his intention when he came to politics, and I want to extend my personal gratitude to him, but also on behalf of all the people that he has served, and wish him and Karen and his family the best for the future. I want to also thank my parliamentary colleagues for the trust they have invested in me today. I thank them for determining, based on my performance, that I am best for the job, and I am so excited that the party has come together united in support of my premiership. I want to thank Dom Perrottet for accepting to be the Deputy Leader of the Liberal Party. Dom and I have worked together side by side in the Expenditure Review Committee for 3 years, and I can assure you of his diligence and his intellect, and he will make an outstanding contribution to New South Wales, especially in his role as Treasurer. And I'm really looking forward to working with him in that capacity. But today is not about myself or about the Deputy Leader. Today is about the 7.5 million people we represent in New South Wales, the 7.5 million people that rely on us and look to us to give them the leadership they deserve and the leadership they need.
That is Gladys Bergelin. I'm going to have to get better at saying that. saying that story, giving her speech, outlining her priorities for New South Wales, the newly elected New South Wales Premier continues.
For granted that we are the only jurisdiction in the nation, and I would say one of the few jurisdictions anywhere, that has virtually no government debt and billions to spend on services and infrastructure. But what we need to make sure is that every community across New South Wales gets its fair share. And that's what I'll be making sure happens. My government will listen to the community, not just at elections, but between elections. The community want and deserve to be heard, and they will be under my leadership. My government will be led by the values that are most important to me, and that's respect and hard work. And what I would like to do today is outline three key policy areas which will be hallmarks of my government. Firstly, local infrastructure. I'm just not talking about those mega projects in Sydney, as important as they are, but I'm talking about making sure every community gets what it needs. I know what difference it is to a community if a dirt road becomes a bitumen road. I know what difference it makes to a community if there's a new hospital ward, or if there's a toilet upgrade at the local sporting oval. Under my leadership, every community across the state will be better off and will get its fair share.
That is Gladys Bergeson. This is her speech outlining some key priorities.
As a government, we have done much in this area, but we know there is so much more to do. I want to make sure that every average hardworking person in this state can aspire to own their own home. That's something that I valued, what worked hard to do, and I want to make sure everybody else has that opportunity as well. And finally, a third policy priority I'd like to outline today is a strong economy. A strong economy means more jobs, it means better services, and it means putting money where it's needed the most. But today there are two things, or two major influences, which I believe have had the greatest impact on the type of person I am and the type of Premier I will be from today. Firstly, I've had the amazing opportunity to have the most outstanding human beings as my parents. I haven't talked about this much previously, but my father was a boilermaker, a welder, and one of the first jobs he did in Sydney was working on the Sydney Opera House, which is a great sense of pride for my family. My mum left school at 15 to help support her family and became a nurse. And during her career as a nurse, I've watched her take care of those most vulnerable and those most in need. Both of them were shift workers, and it wasn't uncommon to be taken care of. And then when I was older, it wasn't uncommon for me to look after my family. But every week, there wasn't a week that went by, I should say, when my parents didn't remind us of how lucky we were to have the opportunities we have here in New South Wales. How lucky we were to... In our household, there was no room for complaining or making excuses. You just got on with the job and did it. And secondly, public education. As my parents were new immigrants, I was born here in Sydney, but when I started school, I couldn't speak English. I remember my mother said to me, don't worry if you don't really understand what the teacher says. Put up your hand and have a go. But today, I took my mother's advice, but I want to pay tribute to all the teachers who, during my life at school, in the public education system, saw something in me and encouraged it. And that's why you will have in me the strongest supporter of Gonski.
That is Gladys Bergeson, newly elected New South Wales Premier. Now, again, didn't get elected by the public, got elected by the party as well. I just want to put that differentiation out there as well. Excuse me. Wow. Gassy today, Dale. Classy. So there we go. So talking about her priorities, local infrastructure, housing affordability, and building a strong economy with emphasis on more jobs. That is what the newly elected Premier has in mind. She also talked about two influences that made her who she is today. She thanked the public school system and her parents for bringing her to where she is now. Now, I don't know much about Glade's Miss Bergelin, but she does stand up on, what she believes in. She also, there's an article, courtesy of the ABC, where she stands on local issues. So we want to bring this article in. But so what she think about council amalgamations? This would loom as an early headache for the newly elected premier after the Nationals' announcement on Friday that they would be no longer to support the policy in regional areas. Several multiplicities around New South Wales are fighting for forced amalgamations in the courts, and the hot button issue will continue to open the wound for the government. Her issue is not clear because she hasn't made a public opinion on it. What's next for WestConnex? New South Wales' top infrastructure priority pet project for the newly elected premier is, who was the transport minister when the stage was rubber stopped in 2011. She also held the transport portfolio in the light rail link from Circular Quarry to Randwick, announced in 2012. The state big infrastructure projects are her projects. And the environment, a clue to her positions on the issues like climate change, would be contained in her inaugural speech to New South Wales Parliament in 2003, where she described her local community as passionate about natural heritage and the environment. She referred to Governor Phillips' 1788 exploration of Middle Harbour. There you go. Lockout laws. The newly elected president has not been on record talking about the controversial lockout laws, which had Mr. Byrne on the nose with younger voters. The 1:30 a.m. lockout laws and the 3 a.m. last drink curfews were slightly relaxed in December of 2016 during her time as Liberal Party deputy leader. On social issues, the newly elected premier was on the record in 2015 supporting marriage equality, a position at odds with her Orthodox Church. In Parliament last year, she described Mardi Gras founders, the 78ers, as heroes. She also seemed likely to back Mr. Byrne's compassionate stance on refugees. In 2015, the New South Wales government signed to resettle 6,000 Iranian and Iraqi refugees over 2 years, and Mrs. Burlistan has publicly supported the proactive approach. Her grandparents were orphaned during the death marches and attacks under the Ottoman Empire in 1915. Nah. So, the community seems to be warming up to her. But what do the polls say? Well, New South Wales is still fairly blue. So, the September news poll saw his net approval fall from 39 points in December of 2015 to -7 points. Ooh, the biggest fall in any mainland state premier in the history of news poll. Yeah, well, that means if -7 approval would be +7 disapproval. Yeah. Math is hard. So, the coalition primary vote slumped 6 points to 42%, while Labour rose to 36%. Despite Mr. Byrne's fall in popularity, he still led state opposition leader Luke Foley as preferred premier with a margin of 42-24. So, somehow stayed above in that state, but people didn't really like the way that he was running things per se. That kind of makes sense. I can see that. There you go. By the way, his Mr. Bird said on Thursday, citing ongoing illness of close members of his family and his decline in popularity as early causes of exiting out of the leadership role early before his term is up. I think the next state election is next year, I want to say. I hope it's not this year.
Because I know what a public education can...
And I don't need that. This is... By the way, we'll take this to the break. This is the newly elected New South Wales Premier going at finishing up her speech.
This is the best place to live and work. We've done so much as a government to make sure that's the case. My job now as the new Premier is to make sure that everybody in our state, every community, gets its fair share. Thank you very much.
That is the newly elected New South Wales Premier. I want to see what she does with greyhounds. Honestly. No, New South Wales, new Premier. There you go. Local politics. Live and local here in Australia. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday, speaking of live and local, Australia Day was on Thursday. Well, listen to the first segment of the show if you really want to hear more about that. But it's a good chance to honour those Australians that do this country proud and have a lot to do with the shaping the future of this country. We'll run down who they were as we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday with Dale Campbell. It's a pleasure to be here, as always, 11:20. You finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. Dale Campbell here with you. It's a pleasure to be here. You've made it to a brand new week. Thanks for diving in to it with us. Well, Australia Day, well, divisive. It is a good chance to honour those who have given so much to this country. Typically, the Australian of the Year Awards have four categories, subcategories in it as well. While not everyone can have the honour of getting the prestigious awards, there are 37 in each category this year that made it into the finals list. And each state does have their own Australian of the Year, but we're just going to focus in on the main recipients as a whole today, if that makes sense, which it does, because this is the show. Okay, so first up is the category of Australian of the Year, Emeritus Professor Alan Mackay-Sim gets the Australian of the Year award. An inspirational scientist and an international leader in stem cell research, Professor Alan Mackay-Sim has given hope to thousands of Australians with spinal cord injuries. A global authority on the human sense of smell and the biology of nasal cells, Alan led the world's first clinical trial of using these cells in a spinal cord injury. In 2014, Allen's research helped play a central role in the world's first successful restoration of mobility in a quadriplegic man as a director of National Center of Adult Stem Cell Research. For a decade, Allen's research has championed the use of stem cells to understand the biological basis of brain disorders and disasters such as celiophobia, Parkinson's disease, and heterospastic paraplegia. There you go. That is Professor Allen Mackay-Sim for his great work receiving the Australian of the Year award. The next category up is Senior of the Year. For 2017, that goes to Sister Anne Gardner, AM, for Community Champion, Connecting Cultures and Celebrating Aboriginal Heritage in 1953. As a 22-year-old member of Daughters of Our Lady of Scarred Heart, Sister Anne Gardner was asked to move to Bathurst Islands to live among the Tiwi people. Sister Anne has devoted 50 of 63 years since enriching community, enriching opportunity, and supporting the Tiwi culture. An advocate of peace, love, and local decision-making, Tiwi language culture, Sister Anne has worked tirelessly to educate generations of children while also enabling community groups from mother clubs to little athletics. Yeah. Go, Sister Anne receiving the Senior Australian of the Year award. The Young Australian of the Year award goes to Paul Vassiliff, acclaimed fashion designer and businessman. With a passion for fashion, alliteration there, rhyming, that's not alliteration at all. Paul, moving on, grammar lesson. Paul Vassiliff stitched his first dress at the tender age of 11, creating countless formal dresses for his friends in his teens, and was just 16 when he showcased his first fashion collection. The young boy who learned to sew with his grandmother graduated from Milan's prestigious Europeo Studio di Design and now has the brain culture behind label Paleo Sebastian. There you go. And finally, the last category is Australia's local hero, Vicky Jalee. After her husband Peter died of cancer in 2008, Vicky Jalee found his plans for a local cancer fundraiser. His dream had to bring radiotherapy services to southwest Victoria. Peter's dream had become Vicky's passion. In 2009, Vicky initiated Peter's Project, a community group dedicated to fighting for improved cancer services. Despite being told that a cancer center in Warrumbull would quote-unquote never happen, Vicky relentlessly lobbied governments, utilizing the community to raise funds. There you go. They are Australians' heroes. I'm going to call them heroes. I'm going to go out on a limb and call them heroes because that's what they are. And Australia Day, that is what Australia Day is about, is not changing a date. It's about recognising those who make this country great. There, I'm going to drop the Australia Day anger for the change of the date thing. This is the first segment of the show in the first hour if you want more juicy goodness on that. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, well, Trump has been in office for a week. And according to some, he wants to put a travel ban on people. We'll tell you more as we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. It's great to be here. Dale Campbell is my name. Don't wear it out because that is mine and my mother's job. Hi, Mum, if you're listening. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Life Show. It's 11:31. We're here to give you a big dose of genericness. This is the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. Dale Campbell here with you. You've made it to a brand new week. Thanks for making us a part of your Sunday. Big dose of genericness coming your way every single Sunday. Hey, again, if you want to, we said this a little while ago, but if you do want to catch the live show, you can, by the way, catch the live show 7 to 9 Sunday morning in America, East Time, or from 10 till midnight Australian Eastern Standard Time, youtube.com/genericliveshow. You can catch it over there as well, or yeah, just listen to the archives. The 2-hour long archives are over there as well. You can listen to them there as well. Now, the headline is The headline is Dale cannot read. There you go. Print done. Thanks for joining us, GLS. We're done. No, just kidding. We've still got at least 25 minutes of quality programming coming your way. Okay, so, all right, Dale, settle down. Trump travel ban causes business chaos. Companies are scrambling to cope with the fallout from U.S. President Donald Trump's executive order barring citizens from 7 countries entering the U.S. as Australian business leaders call on Malcolm Turnbull to help clarify its impact. Mr. Trump's executive order suspending all immigration from countries with terrorism concerns, rather, for 90 days has led to chaotic scenes at U.S. airports as airlines move to enforce the ban on travelers. Oof. Mr. Trump orders citizens from Iran, Iraq, Libya, Serbia, Sudan, Siberia, and Yemen from entering the U.S., even if they hold valid visas or permanent residence permits, a move that has caught many companies off guard. The U.S. technology industry, a major employer of foreign workers, has hit back on the order on immigration. Okay, and some leaders have called it immoral and un-American, which, actually, yeah, I should be capitalizing that sentence. That's not the point. Google urgently called back employees from overseas and other companies' rights to provide legal advice and assistance. Travelers received a brief reprieve after 2 U.S. judges temporarily blocked the administration from enforcing the order that would have required the removal from U.S. airports of refugees, visa holders, and legal U.S. residents. Peter Strong, chief executive of the Council of Small Business Australia, has called on the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade and the Human Rights Commission to clarify the ban for any Muslim travelers to the U.S. Quote, at first glance, this put employers and employees stuck between a rock and a hard place, Mr. Strong said. Employers are not allowed to ask whether their employees are where their employees are from. They are going to the U.S. for business or a conference. They now have to ask in case that staff member will be banned. At least having the 90 days gives them some time reference. But the Australian government and even the American embassy need to keep the public informed, unquote. That is, says Small Business Council Chief Executive Peter Strong. James Peterson, Chief Executive of Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, said the order and its rapid implementation would cause uncertainty for Australian businesses. These businesses would be working overtime to see how they would be affect the changes. In the US, Netflix Chief Executive Reed Hastings calls it a sad week. Aww. Do we need sad music? We need sad music. Get that sad music. Get that sad music up again. We need... Oh, not... What is this? This is not... It's like I'm leaving all my past in silhouettes upon the wall. What is this? Okay, I don't know what that is, and I have no idea what this pink robot is. Anyway... Actually, that bumper music we had is pretty sad. Where's the bumper music that we had? There we go. It's a sad week. Oh, sad week. Yeah, that is tender. That it's a passenger background to music, isn't it? No, I'm just kidding. Don't hate me. It's time to link arms together and protect American values of freedom and opportunity. Apple Chief Executive Tim Cook sent a letter to employees saying Mr. Trump's order was not a policy we support. Well, okay, first of all, it's not a policy, it's an executive order, so therefore he, pardon the pun, trumps you kind of a little bit. Elon Musk took to Twitter and said the blanket entry ban on citizens from certain primarily Muslim countries is not the best way to address the country's challenges, says a businessman. The television magnate and Seven West Media chairman Kerry Strokes visiting the US said Australia shouldn't worry too much about Mr. Trump because it was on the right side of its trade balance sheet and was too strong to lead into acting against its own interest. In Mr. Trump's first week as president, he suggested 20% tariff on all Mexican goods. The administration also this week suggested it should stop intervening to stop China from taking over inventory in the time to see. Mr. Strokes was visiting LA at the start of the annual G'day USA week. I forgot about that thing. Does that still go on? How long has that G'day USA thing been going on? Hasn't that been going on since 2002? I have a feeling that's where...
That's where Keith Urban and Nicole Kidman met, wasn't it?
Didn't they meet at the G'day USA the ball that they have to at the end of the G'day? That's way off topic. that's so far off topic. I don't even know how. The G'day USA thing. Oh, okay, Mr. Trump. All right, so. Ladies and gentlemen, noted, I went from Mr. Trump to the G'day USA ball and Nicole Kidman and Keith Urban in 2.5 seconds. This is a very special episode of the Generic Life Show, I'll tell you that much for sure. Okay, Qantas Chief Executive Officer Alan Joyce echoed Mr. Stroke's ease about the Trump administration, saying he doubted the protectionist president would affect the airline's business. You know... First of all, how would this work? And I should have done my research in this, but how does that work when Mr. Trump says he will ban people from Iran, Iraq, Libya, Siberia, Sudan, and Siberia and Yemen? How does it work when they are an Australian citizen, but they are from those countries? If that makes sense. So, hear me out on this one.
I'm not defending the president, but hear me out. What if their nationality... how to put this lightly, and this is going to come out as wrong, and I hope it doesn't, but I'm just going to go with it anyway. How does... If someone's nationality is, say, Siberian, for example, how does it, but they are born in Australia, but they have heritage that's Siberian, how does that come into it? I just want to put that out there. So, but I do understand how the people that are actually from there, the foreign workers, but how does that, if their nationality is American, is that if they've been over there as well too? I'm assuming that would be if they've come over, if they've come from those seven countries and want to come to the US, then maybe, but banning people from your country is, that's just, wouldn't you, that's not extreme vetting, and I think Trump promised extreme vetting, and that's not extreme vetting, that is, that's just, I don't know what that is. That's literally putting a roadblock sign at the front of a dump, a transfer station. There's still going to be rubbish in the transfer station or the dump before you go to the dump. And I know I just compared America to a dump, but that's not what I meant at all, because that's exactly not what I meant. But you get the gist. There's going to be rubbish inside, let alone the rubbish that's coming in from the outside. And some would argue that stopping the rubbish from coming in from the outside would be better, but I'm realizing, well, not really. Rubbish is still rubbish. So, and again, 80-20 rule in all of this, by the way. Just want to put that out there. And the 20-80 rule, too. The 80-20-20-80, where 80% of the good and 20% of bad, but the 20% bad get 80% of the coverage. So, it's always like that. Meanwhile, Trump tells PM refuge deal stands. So remember that, in consideration to all of these, remember how before Obama left office, the US and Australia did a deal to relocate some refugees. This was late last year. Well, it had to have been late last year because Trump was president-elect in November, so this would have been around that time. The how to relocate, I think it was 20,000. This article doesn't say, and I can't remember how many refugees were relocated. But by the that's much of the muchness. The point is, that deal still stands after a 25-minute phone call with Mr. Trump on today, their first conversation since the billionaire inauguration of the U.S. president last weekend. It came days after Trump's decision to put a four-month block on refugees entering the U.S. There you go. Oh, so it's refugees. So what if the US... Oh, I'm not going there. I'm really not going there. So, they agreed that they have mutual objectives to taking out the Islamic State, and the refugee deal that him and Obama did underneath the table, away from everyone, still stands to this day. I suppose that's something, I guess. If Australia did something. Also, before we leave this segment, I want to put out there for the record that the visa waiver thing that was born this week also died this week. So just want to go into the going into the week with a clean slate. That ban of 90-day visa waiver countries is not a thing. So we're safe for the meantime. No one's touching us. We're staying exactly where we are. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday, Dale Campbell here with you. Thanks for joining us. Now we're going to do one of my favorite things on this show is we're going to do a... we're doing a review of a review. No, we're not doing a review of a review. We're just going to report this straight up. Self-serve checkouts are a thing. But not everyone seems to be getting their head around their purpose. That's a tease, apparently. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. It's 11:50. Whether we're waking you up or putting you to sleep, this is the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. Dale Campbell here with you. It's a pleasure to be here as always. Now, as we're coming to a close here on the Generic Live Show, I want to remind you that next week will be our last show before we take a two-week vacation. Then we'll be right back into it with a new show. So, yeah, next week, the 5th, will be our last show for 2 weeks. Then we're taking a two-week vacation. And then we'll be back with live shows from the 26th. And there you go. And then we'll be back for a couple of weeks. And then we're going to take Good Friday off. And yeah, no, Good Friday. Well, we're... Yeah, we'll take Good Friday off. You know, a show that we don't do. We'll take Easter Sunday off, and that'd be about it for now. Don't have many planned vacations outside of the norm, so just wanted to get that out there. It's coming around quick, by the way. I just want to put that out there. So, want to get this out there before we go. A discount clothing retailer, Best and Less, isn't rushing down the aisle. Excuse me. Oh, gassy today. Discount retailer, Best and Less, isn't rushing down the aisle to install self-serve checkouts. Best and Less chief executive Rodney O'Rourke said retailers should stop relying on customers to do the work of traditionally done shop assistants. Woo! That was loud. Okay. Quote, if I go into Woolworths to do grocery shopping, and if someone's available to do my checkout, I'll go there, right? Because I think they'll do it faster and quicker, and I don't have to concentrate. And sometimes at 6 o'clock in the morning, that's important, Mr. O'Rourke said. But I think in terms of the number of things that retailers may expect from customers to be doing for them, yeah, I think that's that. There's things that what? I think that there's things that retail there you go should be doing, and there's things that customers don't necessarily need to. Wow, tongue-tied much? Mr. O'Rourke said supermarkets lead the way on self-serve checkouts, but doesn't mean other retailers ought to follow suit. This was especially the case when people were shopping for clothes or buying a small number of items, he said. Quote, one thing we try very hard not to do is to get a particular level of your business where it would be very easy to take wages out of the front line, he said. But that's not a great decision because then you can't provide a level of service that you need to be providing. If you look at a supermarket and what have got in an average basket there versus what they'd have in an average basket within an apparel business, you would need a lot more volume to go through to make it financially make sense at the moment, unquote. At best, unless the average shopper is, quote-unquote, the Australian mother, and the average basket size for a woman outerwear is $11. That's even less for underwear purchasers. Stephen Kembler, the founder of retail consultancy Retail Oasis, said that people aged under 40 have taken to self-serve checkout while older people have resisted. He says that retailers that have performed strongly, such as Best & Less rival Kmart, had invested heavily in self-service, enabling them to put staff on the floor and cut checkout queues. Mr. Coleman said the resistance to self-serve checkouts was very old-fashioned. Best & Less has 196 stores, employing about 3,300 people, established in 1965, and is now owned by Franklin-listed Steinloff International, which owns discount department stores Harriscaith in Australia. See, I don't mind either. I mean, there are some purchases that I'd like to make with the self-service, and then there are some checkouts where I just feel like talking to someone. I wouldn't want to do my weekly grocery shopping. You see some people going through the self-serve checkout with their weekly shop, and I'd go through and talk to someone about that, and particularly down where our local shop is, the one I work at, full disclaimer, talking to people about the week's events and just catching up on life, because that's a whole part of the retail experience. It's that customer interaction as well that makes it all of that extra bit interesting, if that makes sense. So there's things to consider as well when you're thinking about retail and self-service checkouts. What do you think? Let us know. Right now. Stop what you're doing. Email the show, genericliveshow@gmail.com. I've been Dale Campbell. This has been The Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell on a Sunday. Pleasure to be here as always. Thanks for joining us. It's 12 o'clock.
This has been a Geekio Media Network production. Copyright 2017.